Hello and welcome to another edition of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. On today's show, we've got a really good game to talk about. The third preseason game went pretty well for the Kansas City Chiefs, but some bad news came around on Tuesday. As I record this show, it's currently Tuesday. You could be listening to it in the future, for all I know. We're talking about that. The Chiefs linebacker position keeps getting thinner, one of the thinnest positions already on the team. Plus some other bits of news around the NFL from other teams who have released players that might be of interest to the Kansas City Chiefs. One man on an offensive line, one man back in that pesky linebacker position that currently feels so uncertain. We've got all of that, plus some praise for rookie Chris Jones, and just as much as you could possibly want from the preseason game, including your takes and takeaways. As always, I will raise up your hopes with optimism and then crush them again with the blows of reality. I hope you're prepared for it. Starting off with the news of the day, even though it is the worst news of the day. Justin Houston was placed on the physically unable to perform list on Tuesday and will miss at least the first 6 weeks, five games for the Chiefs of the season, because the Chiefs have a bye week early on. This is something that I feel like we should have seen the signs of. We should have seen this coming. There was very little talk of what kind of time he was actually going to miss. Over the last few weeks, throughout the whole preseason, I've become increasingly pessimistic on where Justin Houston's rehab is, what we could have expected from him early in the season. But now we know with no uncertainty whatsoever, he's going to be out for the first 6 weeks, the first five games of the season. So now I think it's worthwhile to look at those first 6 weeks, those first five games of the season, and to ask, does the move from the downgrade from Justin Houston to Dee Ford change the outcome of any of these games? And before you kind of scratch all of them off as, no, not that's not going to be a difference to the extent of changing the outcome of the game, it's kind of complex the way we think about the impact that defensive players can have, really even non-quarterbacks. You could take Jeremy Maclin off this roster here and there and say, well, do they still beat, the Bucks in Week 11? Well, yeah, probably. But does losing Jeremy Maclin hurt the team immensely? Well, yes, of course. How do you see that? How do you see what the loss of a player actually is? I don't think wins and losses are the best way to do it. And also, over the course of an entire season is very important. But even guys who are, if you're moving from one of the three to five best pass rushers in all of football, Justin Houston, to Dee Ford, a guy who has really shown so very little as of late, what does that show itself as far as wins and losses go? And for the Chiefs, I don't think it's going to change anything in those first 6 weeks, which is pleasant. But there are two games specifically that I do think if it's going to impact anything, it could impact two of them. I think the Chiefs are going to beat the Chargers at home in Week 1. I think that could happen with or without Justin Houston. In Houston, Week 2, I feel the same way. This Chiefs offense is going to hold up just fine against the Texans defense. The Texans offense isn't good enough to give the Chiefs real problems. That's going to be fine. Week 3, the Jets at home. I do think that's an interesting matchup, but in one of the reasons that it is interesting for why the Chiefs should have the advantage of that game other than just being at home is because Ryan Fitzpatrick under pressure is a worse quarterback, which you could say for literally any quarterback, but Ryan Fitzpatrick does not scare me on the run. If you can disrupt Fitzpatrick's pocket, he becomes a much worse quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick with a totally clean pocket can put up some Alex Smith-type numbers. I don't think that comparison is always unjustified. In a lot of cases, it is. In this case, I think it would be about that's reasonable. So if Fitzpatrick doesn't ever get rattled, there's going to be some issues there. The Jets have a couple of really good receivers. Their defense is going to be fine. It's an average team, but I think the Chiefs win at home with or without Justin Houston. In Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football on Week 4, I think the Chiefs could have two Justin Houstons, and it wouldn't matter. I will be picking the Steelers in that game. Is it a blowout necessarily? No. But if Tom Bahali is not getting pressure and Dee Ford is letting Le'Veon Bell, who will be returning, if I was Todd Haley running the Steelers offense, I would run Le'Veon Bell right at Dee Ford as many times as it took before I stopped laughing. That's a blowout matchup. And Ben Roethlisberger only getting pressured from one side, if that is in fact what would happen in this case, is like pressuring any other quarterback, not at all. So Week 5 is a bye. And then Week 6, it's in Oakland at the Raiders. this is the single game where I could see the loss of Justin Houston showing itself in a loss on the schedule. I think Derek Carr is going to be a really nice quarterback. I think he already is, but I think it's going to continue to grow. Amari Cooper is going to continue to grow. The Raiders' defense is coming together pretty nicely, although Sean Smith had some troubles in the preseason, but I'm not panicking if I'm the Raiders. But Derek Carr, as a young quarterback, when under tremendous pressure, I think is going to really show his age. Without that, though, if he does in fact have a little bit of extra time in the pocket and isn't having to watch his back for Justin Houston coming around to swat the ball out of his hand, I think he's going to look extra poised, even as a young guy. So, in Oakland, I already think the Raiders are a pretty darn good football team. Without Justin Houston, I think that's the game where right now I would lean towards giving the Raiders the edge, because I don't have any faith in the Chiefs' edges of their defense. One thing that I don't want to sell short is I do expect the Chiefs' defensive line to get very, very good pressure. There's so much talent on this defensive line with both the guys on the edge, with Jay Howard and Alan Bailey and Chris Jones and Dontari Poe. I mean, you're talking about four guys who can all wreak havoc. And Chris Jones, I teased it in the intro. Let me see if I can find the... I think it was Pro Football Focus. Had the top-graded rookies this preseason by position. Their top-graded rookie and as a 3-4 defensive end was Chris Jones. I know that's a pretty small sample. Preseason performance for rookies playing defensive end in a 3-4 defense. That's a small sample size, or a small sample pool, I should say. But that's... we saw it with our eyes, too. Chris Jones, in some bursts, is a very good football player and is going to continue to get better and better. I feel good about the defensive line, but there's a reason the Chiefs paid Justin Houston all that money to get pressure from the edge. That is extremely valuable in football. That's probably the second most valuable position in football. There's the quarterback and then the guy who makes the quarterback's life miserable. Those are the two most important positions here. So then adding to the bad news, also here on Tuesday, Josh Malgo was placed on injured reserve, ending his season. I'm a little less worried about this because Josh Malgo is, by my estimation, the second best inside linebacker on this football team, obviously behind Derek Johnson, who is aging, and I, as a part of the whole run defense, struggled this preseason a little bit, especially against the Rams. But I'm less worried about this because behind Josh Malgo is Ramique Wilson, Justin March, DJ Alexander. I'm not thrilled about DJ Alexander, but Justin March has shown some nice flashes. Ramique Wilson has done some good things. It could be worse for the guy beside Derek Johnson. We're going to have to fill that spot with Malga. But Dee Ford is such a total unknown to step in for Justin Houston. Daddy Nicholas is not ready for the NFL. Maybe in some passing downs, but he's not going to be any better against the run than Dee Ford is right now. And Frank Zombo is fine. He's thoroughly fine. In fact, I would rather have Frank Zombo having the responsibility of setting that edge and trying to stop something terrible from happening in the run game. But he's not going to get to the quarterback even like Dee Ford potentially could. One thing that's been a problem for Dee Ford over and over, and Therese Paylor of the Kansas City Star had an article that touched on this a little bit, is the quote-unquote hip flexibility of Dee Ford. Dee Ford can, and I feel like I've said this for 2 years now, Dee Ford has a nice first step. He can beat linemen off of the line at the snap. But whenever he gets into the backfield, the reason Von Miller is a hellraiser is because you've got to then bend sideways and change your angle completely. You get past the lineman, get your hips turned, turn the lineman around, who should be off-center at that point, and you go wreak havoc on the quarterback, wrap him up before he knows what hit him. That's something that I see from Dee Ford. Maybe we've seen two or three times, maybe, in his career. I mean, to see that really well done, stuff that Von Miller does really well 5 to 10 times a game, something I don't know if I've seen Dee Ford do 5 to 10 times in his career. If there's something that happens between, this is what's disappointing, is that I wanted to say if Dee Ford can fix that over the offseason and in the preseason, then maybe he could step in for Justin Houston here. But he didn't do it in the preseason either. And without any signs of actual positive change, I don't know why I should expect Dee Ford to suddenly be able to do that when the regular season gets here. So, frankly, I wouldn't be shocked to see Frank Zombo, no pun intended, frankly, quite frankly, I would not be shocked to see Frank Zombo end up starting one of those games or a few of those games when Justin Houston's still out. I would rather Dee Ford earn a little bit of that respect to demand that outside spot in Houston's absence. But if he struggles against the run continually, if he can't turn that corner and actually get to the passer, he's failing at his two purposes. The two things you've got to be able to do, and also be able to cover guys, but in that linebacker depth, the two most important things is don't be a liability in the run game and be a threat in the passing game. And Dee Ford has pretty much failed at both of those pretty consistently. And that really concerns me. The Chiefs, obviously, last year. And one thing that I feel like is worth mentioning again, just because it's been kind of a strangely under-discussed story, I think, is why we're here with Justin Houston. And I just want to go back to an article from Adam Teicher on ESPN.com from March of 2016. There's just a blurb in it here that I think you can really try to hang your understanding on. It doesn't explain why it took 2 months from Houston's knee injury and a November 29th win over the Buffalo Bills for the ACL injury to be diagnosed and repaired. Those 2 months of lag time could be the difference between Houston having a productive 2016 season or not having one at all. I mean, I understand that maybe John Dorsey in the front office didn't know that Houston's injury was this bad. And if that's the case, then that's something on the doctors. For 2 months, from November 29th to the end of the season, his ACL tear was undiagnosed and unrepaired. And I understand that the Chiefs won a playoff game with Justin Houston on the field, sort of. I get it, but keep this in mind, because this kind of slipped my memory a little bit. Again, from Teicher. The Chiefs obviously wanted Houston back for the playoffs, a goal that seemed reasonable with the initial diagnosis of a posterior cruciate injury. After missing the final 5 regular season games, Houston did play in both playoff contests, even though he obviously was still limited. He wasn't particularly effective and didn't play as much as he otherwise would have. That might even be an understatement, but he didn't play the last 5 weeks of the season. His injury was misdiagnosed and unrepaired. If he is put on ice right there at November 29th, the 30th, the day after the game, and he's back now. I think we're saying maybe he shows up in the third week of the preseason. Or, I mean, we're talking 6 more weeks. Maybe we're really starting to get concerned that he misses a couple of weeks at the beginning of this year. But now he's missing the first 6 weeks of the season because of his injury going undiagnosed. And it's hard to cast blame here, and maybe you can't. Maybe you can't cast blame. But I do think we should understand what happened. This was mishandled. Is it John Dorsey's fault? Perhaps not. Is it a specific doctor's fault? Perhaps not. But this was a huge mistake, a huge missed opportunity to actually get that knee repaired and have him back at the beginning of the season. Now you can say, the Chiefs won a playoff game. That's what we wanted from last season. Yes. But it wasn't because of Justin Houston. And would I have said the Chiefs were going to win those last 5 games of the year without Justin Houston continuing that win streak? Probably not. If you would have said at that moment, hey, Justin Houston going to IR, what's going to happen? Say, oh, the Chiefs missed the playoffs narrowly and the season's a disappointment. But without Justin Houston in those last 5 weeks, they kept winning. They won all 5 of them. And then they won the next game in Houston and then ultimately lost to New England. And a healthy Justin Houston would have changed that New England game. I believe that. Maybe not have changed the total outcome, but would have changed how it was played. And Justin, I think that is the same conclusion we should come to with these first 6 weeks of this year. Justin Houston might not completely change the outcome of a game, but he will change the process of a game. That's why he's worth so much money. A pressure from Justin Houston that Dee Ford wouldn't have gotten, maybe that ends in a Derek Carr interception to Marcus Peters that gets taken back 75 yards and the Chiefs offense punches it in, and we don't ever think of that as Justin Houston changing the game, but that's the kind of plays that do change a game. And if Justin Houston makes that play, but Dee Ford doesn't, and instead Carr has the extra 3 seconds in the pocket, the extra 1 second in the pocket, to find the next guy, and then he hits Amari Cooper in the end zone. and the Chargers win by, or I'm sorry, the Raiders win by four, that's the difference in the game. All of a sudden, the difference in the game becomes Dee Ford didn't make a play that Justin Houston would have. And that's going to be maddening for these first few weeks. So I'm sorry that I don't have much optimism with, and I hope it doesn't even sound like pessimism, frankly. That's just what it's, that's where it's at right now with the Chiefs. That's where Justin Houston is, that's where Dee Ford is, that's where this defense is, that's where the doctors who didn't see what was actually going on in Justin Houston's knee, that's just where we are. And now the Chiefs are going to have to deal with it for better or for worse. One option the Chiefs have is to go for someone the Cleveland Browns released already, with veteran outside linebacker Paul Kruger. And that's, boy, that's a tough way to start a sentence. But Kruger does actually have NFL outside linebacker experience, which is something that you can't say about a guy like Daddy Nicholas, or frankly, Dee Ford in a lot of ways. As at the moment of this recording, the Chiefs and Saints had workouts set up with Kruger. I'm not going to go any deeper into that right now, I guess, because by the time you're listening to this, that could have been decided. He could be somewhere else right now. I'll say if the Chiefs don't sign him, the stuff I said previously all stands, and the Chiefs are very, very shallow at outside linebacker until Justin Houston gets back. If they do sign Paul Kruger, then there's a little bit of optimism just within the idea of having someone who's done it before. And again, the Browns just released him after giving him a pretty big contract a couple years ago. This isn't going to be Justin Houston. This isn't going to be Tom Bahali. This is going to be a step above Dee Ford. And I would, because I do think the Chiefs believe that this is the year that they're supposed to make a playoff run, I would be 100% fine with giving the reps to an old guy because he's better in the moment than trying to build up young guys right now within this season. That's why I think Ja Reed could play over Parker Anger at guard. Speaking of guard, the Lions released guard Jeff Schwartz, brother of Mitchell Schwartz, the Chiefs' new right tackle. I don't remember who tweeted it, but someone said that Schwartz is healthy and just got caught up in a numbers game in Detroit. I don't think the Chiefs are shopping for veteran guards, but if you are concerned about Parker Anger, and I do have a little bit of concern there, and you think maybe you could add in some veteran guard depth, bringing Schwartz back would not bother me one bit. One other bit of NFL news that is not directly related to something the Chiefs are going to do, but is my favorite thing, is that the Broncos are starting Trevor Siemian in week one. The Broncos are starting Trevor Siemian in week one. I think that's hilarious. And maybe I shouldn't think it's hilarious, because I thought it was hilarious that the corpse of Peyton Manning was throwing ducks and that Brock Osweiler was all of a sudden the franchise quarterback of the future. And then the Broncos won the Super Bowl. So what do I know? But they go and get Mark Sanchez, who, as of this recording, sounds like he might not make the team. So then they could release him and not have to give up a draft pick. Sounds like Mark Sanchez might not make the team. Trevor Siemian, a guy who was the third stringer behind the corpse of Peyton Manning and future Houston Texans Hall of Famer Brock Osweiler. Trevor Siemian has done nothing. He hasn't thrown an NFL pass, unless something happened during the season last year that I don't remember. I'm assuming he hasn't thrown an NFL pass. He definitely hasn't had any meaningful playing time. This is great. This is going to be a lot of fun. The Broncos' defense is in really good shape. Not as good a shape as it was last year, but really good shape still. Their offense is a disaster. They don't have a quarterback, but they didn't really have a quarterback last year other than, you know, Peyton Manning's brain functioning the offense like Krang in the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoons, where it was just like this hyper-intelligent, crazy, creepy-sounding, and creepy-looking, frankly, brain suspended in some sort of embalming fluid, who was controlling a giant flesh robot from the inside with a brain was like in the stomach. Just search Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles if you don't know what I'm talking about. If you do, this analogy is on point and you know it. Peyton Manning's brain was just floating in the lifeless body of the Broncos offense, in his own lifeless body. But just with pure intellect, Peyton Manning willed the Broncos to a Super Bowl. I don't think Trevor Siemian's going to do that, which is awesome. Also, just for a side note of my favorite other thing, remember those anonymous executives that, maybe a couple of months ago, maybe less than that, those anonymous NFC executives that said they would take Mark Sanchez over Alex Smith, and then I yelled about that for a long time because that seemed like the dumbest thing I've ever heard? Do they also want Trevor Siemian over Alex Smith now? I mean, that was absurd then, and it keeps getting more absurd. He's not going to make a roster with Trevor Siemian and Lynch. And Mark Sanchez was never going to do anything of note in Denver. He's playing with Gary Kubiak, who had Matt Schaub. I think you could say Mark Sanchez is pretty much, I don't know, a poor man's Matt Schaub, or at the very least, just Matt Schaub. But even before Matt Schaub started becoming nothing but a pick six machine, what was Mark Sanchez going to do in Denver? Come on, that was silly then, but it's funnier now, because it implies that you would also take, you would not only take Mark Sanchez over Alex Smith, you would now also take Trevor Siemian, week one starter for your Denver Broncos. Kansas City Chiefs 23, Chicago Bears 7. This is a better preseason game if you're a Chiefs fan, a worse preseason game if you are a Bears fan. For comparison, Alex Smith was 20 for 30 for 181 yards in his start. Jay Cutler was 6 for 15 for 45 yards in his. Really, really ugly for the Bears. Overall, though, a lot of nice things to take away if you are a Chiefs fan, which you're listening to this show, so of course you are. Why else would you be listening to this show? Let's start from the top and hit the few things that I think are noteworthy throughout this game. I'm not going to do this for the fourth preseason game, so don't worry about it. But first, for the first quarter, and really from the opening kickoff, Tyreek Hill took the opening kick, which was news for Nile Davis. I've said for a little while now, I think Nile Davis is good enough to be the third running back and the kickoff return specialist on maybe half of the teams in the NFL. But on this Chiefs team, he's not. He's probably the fifth back on this team right now. And if Tyreek Hill can return kickoffs, which I think he can, then now Davis becomes extra expendable. Zach Fulton started at center for an ill Mitch Morse. Hopefully Morse is ready to go. I think also now Parker Anger is ill. Hopefully that gets cleared up before the regular season begins. It should. We got, 2 weeks almost. Starting off the game, Alex Smith hit Jeremy Maclin hit him a bit short of the first down on a second down, but Maclin split his tacklers and fell forward for the first 10 yards. Next pass, a curl route on the other side of the field for Chris Conley, 16 yards. Third and 5, beautiful pass to Travis Kelce, cutting to the sideline. Nice route, perfect throw, great catch. Need more of that from Travis Kelce this year. 14 yards. I read those also fast and together, because those are 10, 16, 14-yard plays. I'm going to start calling those small chunk plays. The Chiefs are going to need to be able to pick up things in small chunks like that consistently this season. With the run game, I think they can get 4, 5, 6 yards, not actually at will, but very consistently. I don't think this team is going to get 30 and 40-yard chunk plays very often at all. The big plays on this team are going to be pretty limited. The short plays on this team, the short but successful plays, I think are going to be everywhere if Andy Reid does choose to run the ball as much as this team probably should be running the ball. Also considering we haven't seen Jamaal Charles yet. Oh, also Eric Berry's back. I didn't even mention that. Sorry, he's back. You knew that already, and it doesn't really matter. I knew this was going to happen. I tried to tell you. We haven't even seen Jamaal Charles yet, and this run game is going to be just absurd. The Chiefs can pick up those short run gains all day. They can hit those giant plays in rare exceptions, but those 10, 15 to 20 yard plays, those kind of small chunk plays, are going to be vital for this offense. I feel like no one else is talking about how important that's going to be here, because that's what's going. The defense has to respect that element of the game. Otherwise, all of those short things the Chiefs can do, the Chiefs can pick up 5 yards every play consistently, but if the defense realizes that that's all they can do, all of these weapons on this offense are going to fall apart. And the entire ball movement of this offense that is built to do that in 5 to 7 yard chunks, it's going to fall apart. It's going to cease to work that way because defenses can play to a certain range. Defenses can stop the run or can stop short passes or can stop the big play, the deep ball. You've got to be able to do a few of those things. And I think that's one reason I'm so optimistic about Alex Smith and this offense now. We know they can run. We know they've got 4 guys who can run the ball if Darren Reeves makes this team. I feel pretty confident that they can also get these 10 to 15 yard plays pretty consistently. I digress. Albert Wilson should never run jet sweeps ever again. He did. It didn't work. They tried to run jet sweeps with Albert Wilson last year. I generally hate jet sweeps. And I'm talking about this later on because Tyreek Hill, I remember writing this up because Tyreek Hill ran a jet sweep later in the game. And it's how jet sweeps are supposed to work. I generally hate watching the Chiefs run jet sweeps where a receiver runs from the slot all the way around and then takes the handoff and then keeps going. Because, that play is telegraphed so early on. The best move you can do on a jet sweep is not hand it to the receiver running behind the quarterback and try to sneak the ball somewhere else or throw it to the other side. The actual handoff and then ending in Albert Wilson getting exactly 2 yards and then running out of bounds is just never worth it. Later on, Tyreek Hill did it, and I remembered why I hate jet sweeps. It's not because I hate the play, because I hate whenever they're run with guys who aren't fast enough to pull them off. Tyreek Hill can get from his spot on one side of the field to the ball, to the other sideline, and then be cutting back up the field quickly enough that defenses can't quite get there in time. That's fine. If the Chiefs want to run those with Tyreek Hill, or even DeAnthony Thomas didn't do them as well as Tyreek Hill does, and I've only seen one from Hill, then fine. Let Tyreek Hill run a sweep. Stop letting Albert Wilson do it, please. I don't know if I've ever seen it work with this Chiefs team. There's another rant on something so small, but it drives me nuts because there are little details like that, little wasted plays. Those things add up, man. Those things matter. And that's something where I feel like sometimes Andy Reid is a little bit blind to his own shortcomings with not running jet sweeps. If you're playing a drinking game or you want to have a friend listen to this show, tell them to take a drink every time I say jet sweep or Justin Houston or D Ford. Any of those things, and you will not have made it to the half-hour mark on this show. The defense really caved down the Bears' offensive line whenever they came onto the field, especially on 2nd and 2. Justin March and Frank Zombo, especially on that play. No Houston, Holly, or Malga in that game. Now we know no Houston or Malga for 6 weeks. No Malga for the whole season. Tamba Holly should be back for week 1. He's been in practice. So March and Zombo having a nice little spot there is encouraging. On 3rd down, Derek Johnson had Langford dead to rights in the backfield. The Bears running back, Jeremy Langford, dead to rights in the backfield. But he got brushed off, and the Bears got a 1st down, which was a really rare thing to see for Derek Johnson to be on the guy and then to end up getting run past. But then later on 1st and long, Derek Johnson made up for it. Chiefs get the ball back. Offense gets to 3rd and 2, and then Smith hits Demetrius Harris for a couple of yards downfield for a really easy conversion with Travis Kelce and Ross Travis on the field for a 3 tight end set. It was Smith's 6th completion to his 6th receiver that far into the game. And that 3 tight end set with Travis, Kelce, and Harris is going to show up in the regular season plenty. Those 3 guys, by my estimation, are on the team. James O'Shaughnessy is gone. Brian Parker is a fringe guy right now if they need another blocking tight end on the team. But we know Andy Reid loves those tight ends. Alex Smith loves them too. Those guys are going to be making this team. On the next play, there was a fake sweep, and Smith hit Chris Conley on a very Jeremy Maclin-y kind of route, a little post about 12 yards downfield. It was stupendous, and I want to see more of that. Again, 12-yard plays to Chris Conley are going to change this offense, as boring as that may sound. Next play, Alex Smith takes a sack, even though he had some time and he had a nice pocket for a while, but he just could not find an open wide receiver. It was a very standard like coverage sack, although it did look like Jeremy Maclin was getting open deep, but Smith couldn't find him. Then on 2nd and 14, a short pass bounced off Albert Wilson, which made me want to pull my hair out. I might have become, in the last year or so, maybe even the last 6 to 8 months, I feel like I was really high on Albert Wilson last year. I might have become a secret Albert Wilson hater, perhaps unjustly. I'm willing to concede that it might be unfair, but he drives me insane sometimes. Then on 3rd and 14, Smith rolled right under pressure, saw Green in front of him, and ran for 16. And he had to throw an actual juke dive kind of thing to get it. And it was nice. It was a good move. I know we hear this, and I talk about this all the time. So if you listen to this show, you might not have this problem. But I think even I still have this problem. Somehow I feel like we still underrate how good Alex Smith is on the ground. I mean, if not just like the ability to scrap out of a play and pick up a couple of yards that would otherwise have been a sack, but like it was 3rd and 14 and he was on the run looking for a receiver, still pulled his eyes back down, and then ran for 16, threw on a juke, and got the 1st down. And he does that stuff all the time. Again, another small chunk play. You don't usually expect those from Alex Smith, but everybody was going deep. He found space, had to beat one guy to do it, and he did. I mean, we watched Jay Cutler. If you watched that game, you saw Jay Cutler a couple of times roll out and have some grass in front of him and then throw down a quick slide so he didn't get murdered by a linebacker or something. because he doesn't have the capability to beat somebody on the ground. And Alex Smith genuinely does, which, again, somehow I feel like is still a little bit under an underrated part of his game. Then on first down, the Chiefs bunched three tight ends up again. Kelce dropped back into a place where he could have taken a screen behind Travis and Demetrius Harris, and the Bears ended up having four defenders over on that formation, which I think is very interesting. But the Chiefs ended up just running it up the middle with Spencer Ware, so that they didn't actually go to that. But keep an eye on that, because that pulled an extra defender over there, because the Bears realize, I think, when you see the Chiefs line up three of those tight ends over there, you've got to have an extra guy. Three guys probably aren't going to be able to stop that play. If it's a screen to Kelce and you've got two tight ends in front of him, or if all three are guys, those guys are blocking and something else is going over there, you're going to need to have more help than you currently do. In this case, it just helped the Chiefs win a numbers game. But I think that little three tight end formation that I already mentioned twice in this game, we're going to continue to see throughout this year quite a bit. After that, Darren Reeves came in and got lit up at the line of scrimmage, like just destroyed. But that was the first of several indications that he has, in my mind, and perhaps in the mind of the Chiefs, passed up Nile Davis. Getting that situational carry in a game where obviously no Charles or Charkandrick West, Nile Davis is usually that guy who would come in there. I mean, he's obviously been passed up by Spencer Ware, but in that instance to not even come in and to have Reeves come in and get several carries in this game, I think is another instance of the Chiefs are saying, if we can ship Nile Davis out for a sixth-round pick, we would absolutely take it. That was the end of the first quarter. Then in the second quarter, it was second and 9 at the 10. I'm going to get upset again, so if you don't like it whenever I'm upset at Andy Reid, maybe, I don't know, fast forward 2 minutes. Second and 9 at the 10, Smith got plenty of time to go through his reads. He slid from the more compromised bit of the pocket and moved over and hit Jeremy Maclin over the middle, and Maclin got to the 4-yard line. It was a nice little shuffle around for Alex Smith and a nice pass to Maclin. Nice, fine. Then it's 3rd and 2 at the 4. And Alex Smith throws a 1-yard slant pass to Ross Travis. And I hate it. I hate it so much. I understand that in that case, Ross, you've got a big tight end with a full head of steam, and his momentum is supposed to be enough to carry him into the end zone, or at least, for the love of God, past the first down marker. And Harris and Kelce, back in that three tight end set kind of thing, were there in front of him, supposed to clear out the space to give Travis the space to make it into the end zone there. I get it. I get that's supposed to work. But the Bears just set up a wall of large human beings and stopped that. Stopped all of that after 1 yard. I run out of words to describe my angst about what things the Chiefs do inside the red zone. And so they settled for a field goal, which made me furious and very also a little sad. Back on defense, Philip Gaines was out at this point, and Steven Nelson came in for him. Gaines did get the start, played very few snaps in this game. I am tremendously concerned about Philip Gaines trusting his knee, tremendously concerned about where he goes from here, what the Chiefs go from here. Kavari Russell's still getting no snaps. Steven Nelson cannot play the outside. I don't really want to see Marcus Cooper have to do that again. And Philip Gaines looks like a guy who not only hasn't trusted his knee yet, but even once he does trust his knee again, is going to have to take some time to get back up to NFL's game speed. And that deeply concerns me. Bears went 3-and-out, though, after Derek Johnson ran around the entire offensive line and sacked Cutler beautifully. Tyreek Hill then had a nice 20-yard punt return. All good there. Smith then pretty effortlessly hit Maclin on a little slant whenever the Chiefs get the ball back. Conley gets beat around on a little bit of a curl route and can't make the play, so the Chiefs have to punt back. That was a little frustrating, but hopefully that's something where Conley can kind of get his physicalness up to the level of the corners who are beating him up. That's something that I'm not terribly concerned about, but something that did stand out on that specific play. Bears get the ball back. Alshon Jeffery drops a pass that hits him in the hands on 2nd and 10. Then the Chiefs pressure Cutler, who runs for a few yards and then slides. Frankie Hammond fields the punt and goes nowhere. Ball back to the Chiefs offense. Then the Chiefs offense gets down to 3rd and 3. Alex Smith scrambles but keeps his eyes downfield, gets hit by 2 Bears, and hits Kelce surrounded by 3 Bears. We have enough for a story about porridge at this point. Alex Smith keeping his eyes downfield here is super impressive to me. He feels the pressure. He knows what's coming. This is a case where a younger Alex Smith would have absolutely pulled his eyes down, started looking in the pocket for a place to run, would have gotten sacked, and we would have been going, man, Alex Smith, you could have found somebody here. And in this case, it was to a very small window, again, with Travis Kelce being surrounded by three members of the defense. That I think that play is a great sign of Alex Smith's growth. Then on the next play, roughing the passer flag comes down. Alex Smith has gotten beat around two plays in a row. Then on 1st and 10, he runs for a first down. Tyreek Hill drops a pass. Then on 3rd and 2, Smith hits Kelce again across the middle on a little drag route for a first down, and then some. Then, almost indescribably quickly, the Chiefs dissolved and kicked another field goal to the point where I legitimately, I watch the game and take notes and tweet at the same time. That's kind of at JB Briscoe, if you didn't know. If you listen to the show and don't follow me on Twitter, I don't know what you're doing. Twitter is one of the most important things in my life. I'm a sad person. So as I'm watching the game, taking notes on stuff, hopping over to Twitter, seeing what else is going on, I might have grabbed a sandwich at some point. Not even a sandwich, like hummus, probably. I was probably eating hummus and corn chips. Because I got it, man, I got to focus. I got to keep the brain, you know, on that, keep those neurons firing. I feel like by the time I put a chip in my mouth, tweeted something, finished a note about Alshon Jeffrey dropping a pass, and looked up, and all of a sudden, the Chiefs' offense had absolutely stopped, and Cairo Santos was kicking again. It was a whirlwind how quickly that drive stalled out, which does concern me, but I digress for now. Chiefs end up giving the ball back then, obviously, after the field goal. And 2nd down on defense, Chris Jones swam past his guy and swatted Jay Cutler's pass right back into his own face. And then Cutler ended up sailing a pass over Alshon Jeffrey's head, and the Bears fans started to boo. That offense is terrible. Chris Jones with a really nice play. Alshon Jeffrey beat whoever was guarding him. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Marcus Peters at that point. The Bears offense just did not want to play football. That's my diagnosis. Chiefs offense then hits another groove, best shown with a 19-yard catch and run from Demetrius Harris. All three of those tight ends, man, a couple passes from Kelce already mentioned. Ross Travis got the target in the red zone. Demetrius Harris gets a 19-yarder here. If you're in playing fantasy football, I will be a little bit concerned about Travis Kelce because all three of these guys are going to get catches and targets and in different scenarios. That's good for the Chiefs offense. Bad for Travis Kelce fantasy owners. Good for the Chiefs offense. More weapons, the better. Tyreek Hill then gets a handoff on a sweep and runs straight around a tackler. This goes back to the jet sweeping. I hate 90% of jet sweeps because the guys running them aren't fast enough to do it. Tyreek Hill straight up ran around a guy who was like there to stop him. He can run those. I will allow Tyreek Hill jet sweeps. Nobody else. Maybe DeAnthony Thomas, but he's probably not going to be on this team in a week. So then Smith checks down a questionable pass to Anthony Sherman behind the line of scrimmage, which actually may have been by design after watching it a few times, but in live time, it looked like a panic move for Alex Smith as the offensive line was not doing their end of the bargain, holding up their end of the bargain here. But he flips over Anthony Sherman, who somehow squirted through a couple of tacklers and got the first down, which was kind of crazy on its own. But that tackler from behind catches up and knocks the ball out. The Chiefs also somehow miraculously recovered the ball at the bottom of the pile, and the Chiefs the ball then in the red zone. 1st and goal. Smith throws it too high for Ross Travis on a fade in the end zone. Fades are very rarely successful. If you're going to do it, then sure, do it to an ex-college basketball player, I suppose. But they are pretty rarely successful. 2nd and goal. Smith hits Mack Lindsey, slides to the ground inside the 1-yard line, which is kind of amazing, after bobbling it on the way down. Not a perfect throw, definitely not a clean catch, but it's successful enough. Then 3rd and in about an inch, Spencer Ware gets the handoff, gets stuffed at the line, keeps moving his feet, and gets into the end zone, carrying a few Bears on his back. Really a very nice run, a nice 3rd and inches pile driver from Spencer Ware. And a player, frankly, looked like he was going to get stopped at first contact. Then the Bears get the ball back. The first half ends with a missed check down and a sack fumble for the Bears as time expires. And the second half opens up. Now with the second half, in a nutshell, the Bears are bad, they missed a field goal, whatever, who cares. Foles came in, had a really nice 22-yard strike to Tyreek Hill off of Foles' back foot, and after stepping up into the pocket, it was wiped out with a holding penalty, but it was a really nice play for both of those guys. Then Foles threw the ball from the 20 to the other 20 in the air, which Hill basically fielded like a punt for a 58-yard gain. It was not a good throw, it was underthrown, but Hill shredded his defender and then turned around and scooped it up just above the turf. Really a nice play from Tyreek Hill. I want to see him go deep like that more often. I don't know how deep he can go before he's out of Alex Smith's range, but man, he can get separation. I think we're going to see Tyreek Hill become a real part of this offense by the end of the season. Maybe not at the front end, but by the end, I think he's going to be a legitimate weapon. Not just in special teams, but offensively also. Chiefs ended up stuck at 4th-and-1 at the 5-yard line, but Darren Reeves got the first down. A couple of carries later, he punched it in. I've said this before. Nile Davis is on his way out here. Just basically no work. No work in the first half, or even with Darren Reeves getting those touches there in that game against the Bears. He'll take the opening kickoff. I hope he finds a spot somewhere. As I have said several times, Davis could be the third running back and the kickoff return specialist for most teams in football, I think. But the Chiefs are just too deep at both of those places. Brian Hoyer came in, and Chris Jones continued his march into the backfield. D'Anthony Thomas had a nice punt return, which made me realize even more. Not with Nile Davis, with maybe some defensive linemen, certainly with D'Anthony Thomas and Nile Davis, though. The Chiefs are going to be cutting some good players, maybe even with Aaron Murray. There have been rumors today that the Chiefs have been trying to shop Nile Davis and Aaron Murray. Anything for either of those guys I would take if I was the Chiefs. Especially Teddy Bridgewater. Sounds like he had a really horrendous injury today, and Tony Romo's back is going to keep him out for 6 to 10 weeks. So both the Cowboys and the Vikings, I assume, would have a little bit of interest in Aaron Murray. If you can get anything from either of those teams for Murray or from a running back hungry team for Nile Davis, the Chiefs should take it. But everyone also knows that Murray and Davis are going to get cut sooner rather than later. So if they want to try to gamble and wait it out, that makes sense as well. Murray did come in and made a nice throw or two, but threw a bad pass, went off the hands of somebody, and got picked off, and blah, blah, blah. He's been a dead man since Hogan got drafted. And certainly he's been, and he was a zombie. He's been a dead man since Hogan got drafted. We've considered him a zombie. Zombie got killed again whenever Nick Foles got signed. That's where he is as a Chief. Bears turned it over on downs. Murray had another nice drive that ended in a bad throw and a field goal by Santos. Then the Bears started on a drive of their own to get their only points of the day. Hoyer actually got hurt on that drive. Connor Shaw came in and ultimately hit somebody we have never heard of for a touchdown, made it 23-7. Later, Kevin Hogan came in and the Chiefs went 3 and out. Bears ended up turning the ball over on downs after Connor Shaw got his leg broken above the ankle in a messy pocket. Raheem Nunez-Roches hit him a little bit late. Shaw later said something about it being BS. It was the letters he used on Twitter. Deleted that tweet eventually. But Nunez-Roches did hit him a little bit late, and he kind of ended up pulling him down while also landing on Shaw's feet. It was ugly, and it was not flagged. And I don't think he got fined, and I don't think he should. But it was a little late and certainly unfortunate for a guy, you know, just trying to hang on to the end of the Bears roster with a really weak group of quarterbacks. So, later reported there was a broken left leg above the ankle. Chiefs got the ball back at the end of the game, took a couple of knees. That was all she wrote. The Chiefs win a preseason game, which, as the 4-0, 0-16 Lions can tell you, the preseason is extremely important to get victories in. Most of the roster moves the Chiefs have made at this point have been moves that would be expected. Guys we don't know, guys we haven't talked about on the show. One thing they did do, though, after the Bears game that's interesting is they traded for previously 49ers cornerback Kenneth Acker. Now, Kenneth Acker was a 6th-round pick in the 2014 draft for the Niners, and the Chiefs gave up a 7th-round pick in 2018 for him. He had 68 tackles, 3 interceptions, 13 starts in 2015. He's not a veteran by any means, but he is more experienced than most of the other guys in this Chiefs secondary, at least in this Chiefs cornerback room. So I expect to see him be on this opening day roster, maybe even getting more playing time than you would have first expected. I don't know how the Chiefs found out that he was available for such a low price. I don't know if he was going to be cut by the Niners. My guess is that he was going to be cut by the Niners, and the Chiefs wanted to say, we're going to end up picking him up if we can. Let's go ahead and spend a very low-value draft pick to make sure he ends up on this team. The motivation behind that? I don't think Philip Gaines trusts his knee. I don't think the Chiefs think Steven Nelson can play outside. Don't think they trust Kavari Russell yet. Those other young guys aren't ready yet. DJ White is not ready, and that's fine. It's just where they're at currently. So maybe Acker ends up being one of those guys in the mix who's getting significant playing time early in the season at the cornerback spot. the two guys the Chiefs cut actually early on, even well before the deadlines that they released, the names you know, Mike Williams, previously known as the receiver from Tampa Bay, and Stevie Brown, the safety. Stevie Brown has already signed with the Panthers. I don't believe Mike Williams, as of the recording of this show, has signed with anybody yet. But those are a couple of guys that they cut and said they wanted to give a chance to sign on with someone else early on because they can definitely still play, but both just at the bottom of the depth chart for the position that they were at with the Chiefs, which I guess should make you feel pretty decent about the Chiefs receiving group, because Mike Williams, I think, is still pretty interesting. He barely got playing time in the preseason, and even though he made some nice plays in training camp. But that's the state of this Chiefs, these Chiefs receivers right now, which, again, is a positive. Now let's hop over to a few takes and takeaways from you guys from after the game, since the announcement about Justin Houston being on the PUP list. Anything that came to mind, let's see what you've got. Starting, as usual, with Keyshawn Brown, D Ford has to produce. This team is championship ready, but he's got to be a main part. I agree to some extent. If any other options come around, then I would get over D Ford pretty quickly. As long as he's the only legitimate option for someone to play opposite Tom Bahali, then I do agree. But if the Chiefs can find a different direction to go, like Paul Kruger, then I would actually back off that a little bit, I think. Philbert, Houston's not a great surprise, just disappointing. Malga, though, that does surprise him, is not highlighted as serious. That's true. Malga, we were talking about as a guy who just wasn't playing in the Bears game. Now we're saying, oh, he's out for the year. We have to replace him for the entire season. Ty DeClaire, thank you for responding to my tweet about the injury with yikes, Scoob. I liked that very much. Jamie Jackson said, man, the D Ford era makes me depressed, like a dark depression deep in my soul. It's really sad. I hope he lightens that up for all of us sometime soon this season. Jamie Jackson, hey, after watching Sean Smith get decimated this week, are you rethinking hashtag should a franchise tag Sean Smith? Not yet, no. Give me a few weeks of the actual regular season. I think Sean Smith is going to be fine in Oakland, and I think the Chiefs secondary is going to look very, very suspect. Ultimately, maybe, and one thing with Sean Smith is getting the franchise tag, not the long-term deal, is because I understand that he might only have a couple years left in the tank. To have one more year of him, I would have been very, very on board with. Maybe the Chiefs then make other moves to fill the hole that Eric Berry would have left. So I'm not backing off yet, but I'd be plenty happy to ultimately be wrong on that, for Eric Berry to have a great season and for Sean Smith to struggle in Oakland. But beyond that, no, I'm not stepping away just yet. A takeaway from the game from Ray Hines. My takeaway, we can embarrass bad teams. That's a good thing, not a knock. I agree with that. In fact, I think that's a very important an important distinction. I don't take a lot away from beating bad teams very badly because you're playing lesser competition, but making lesser competition look like lesser competition is a very good thing. If the Chiefs went neck and neck with the Bears, maybe today we'd be saying, oh, you know, they hung tough with a pretty talented Bears team and blah, 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 blah. And then the Bears go out and go 4-12 this season. We'd be looking back and going, man, what was that? What happened there? So yes, showing the weaknesses of a weak team is a absolute positive. So I think that's a good distinction to make. Ty DeClaire, the defense took a huge step, probably stemming from a great week of practice, very encouraged. I'm encouraged to an extent. This is where the bad team thing makes me a little bit more concerned. They looked very good against a bad team. If we can take it in that context, let's roll with it. They embarrassed a bad team. Awesome. That's not the same thing as embarrassing a good team. It's not as good as that, and it's not as bad on any level as getting beaten up by a bad team. They did what they needed to do it against a bad team. I think that should be praised, but they can only be praised so far. So that there is a limit within that, I think. I hope that's everybody who shot up a question this week or a take or takeaway. I'm a little bit disappointed that I haven't made enough time for myself tonight to talk about Colin Kaepernick. If you are interested in the Colin Kaepernick story, you can go to my Twitter. You can go to the facebook.com/RTK Facebook page for this show. I was on Sunday on Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City with TJ Carpenter on Sports Sunday. We talked about Colin Kaepernick a lot. I made a supercut of our Kaepernick discussion, the one for about an hour and a half. If you're looking for more things to listen to, I would encourage you to listen to that if you are interested in that story. Maybe I'll talk about it sometime next week. We'll see how everything pans out. Speaking of next week, Ty, I'm going to just talk directly to Ty DeClaire, one of the Patreon supporters of this show, had a really interesting take about something that Jamaal Charles could become for this team. I'm going to bring that to you next week. There's a tease for a story next week whenever we're coming around after more roster cuts and after the fourth preseason game. which no starters will play in, so that part of the show will be very short, so bring that in next week. Any other questions or comments you have, you can send to me on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, on Facebook, facebook.com/RTK Show. And as always, if you really enjoyed this show, you can not only follow those social media, but you can rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps more people see the show, and that's the goal for me, is to get more people listening to this show and grow this community even more. Or you can support the show financially, as a handful of you do, at patreon.com/RTK. At patreon.com/RTK. Patreon is a virtual tipping and rewards website where you can give some money to your favorite creators in exchange for whatever perk that we may be able to offer back to you. In this case, it's a Twitter shout-out, a name shout-out, and a thank you to the people in these groups. The $20 group is being spearheaded for a while now by Don Beal, at DonBeal32 on Twitter, and Andy Simpson and Steven Smith. Those guys have been funding this show with $20 a month for a while now. I am so appreciative of what they've allowed me to be able to do here. Also in the $10 group, longtime supporter Tide Declare, at TideDeclare44 on Twitter, and the return of Christine Roadlander, one of the first supporters of this show on Patreon, at CRoadlander on Twitter, is back again for the regular season. Thank you for joining back on the bandwagon. Also in the $5 group, longtime supporter Josh Beadle. If you've been listening to this show through the offseason, you probably know all of their names by heart. I know I do, even though I make sure I get your Twitter names right, so I do have it in my notes. I'm not pretending to go off the top of my head. I don't want to screw this up, because I am so appreciative of those of you who do support this show financially. Allows me to do this show more often, invest more time into this show, and overall, hopefully, produce a better project, a better overall product every time. And if you do enjoy the show in any of those ways, supporting them by sharing the show on social media, sharing the show in real life with your friends and family who are Chiefs fans looking for their Chiefs fix. I appreciate that so very much. So if I can in any way, if you can in any way help share the show in a way that I can help bring more of your Chiefs heroine to you, no matter where in the world you are, I am always happy to do that. My name is Joshua Briscoe on Twitter, at JB Briscoe. As always, thank you for listening, for your support of the show. We'll be back next week talking about whatever happens in the fourth preseason game and the Chiefs cutting down their roster to the 53-man, anything else that might pop up along the way. I'm excited to talk about it. As always, thank you for your time. Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?